Greetings again this evening. Again, it's a kind of a privilege to be here. Appreciate what we've heard already this evening. It's been a thought, it's love is so important. And when we think of a family, that is, if that's not a part of our family, why it's the same way, there's a lot of friction there, and eventually, bad things can happen. But I, as we look at this subject, I appreciate thank the ushers for passing out those papers. And I'm sorry, I think I shorted a little bit there. I don't know. Did you get it covered? They're making some more copies. Okay, thank you. Thinking about biblical parenting, and this morning we talked about principles that undergird godly home relationships. And like I said, I am using, by permission, the outline that Brother Steve used there, and it's a subject that I even had somebody tell me that you ought to let somebody older do that, and that's the way I kind of feel too. But I believe we can we can go by what the Bible says. There's things that apply, and there's nothing that's, we can't lay anything out that's going to exactly work for everybody, but there's principles that apply. And there are things that, if you do this, this is what's going to happen. And there's consequences for actions. And we can expect something. Ultimately, a child, sometime in life, will make their own decision. And that's something that everyone has their own choice, a choice to make. But think of the home life atmosphere. Home is something that it's all a part of us. We're all involved in home life one way or another. We came from a home. And it's something that's it's real to each one. Those of you who have papers there, the papers on the different types of homes. If you start on the left-hand top side of the list there, the home that is high in love, low in discipline, is an indulgent home. The mentality is that your wish is our wish. We want whatever you want. We'll try to make you happy. And we see that a lot of times. You go to the grocery store, you see what happens. Maybe somebody tells their child, no, you can't have this, but finally, for peace, we'll do whatever you say. You can have it. The structure is chaotic and unpredictable. The rules are basically non-existent. Efforts at placating the children with bursts of anger. Affection is effusive pampering and catering to wishes. The outcome is an expectation that others will serve. That's what the end product will be. There are other people out there to serve me. And a biblical home that might represent this type of home would have been Eli's home. He had low in discipline. Eli was a godly man, but somehow he didn't pass that on to his children. And we know what happened to them. The next one down below that, low in love, low in discipline, and neglectful. The mentality is that my interests, a parent's interests or problems take priority, and that each has to fend for themselves. Now the unspoken rule is stay out of my way. I want to do what I want to do, and the mentality of the children is they're just a nuisance. As soon as we can get them to school, get them to college, and get them out, then we can live life again. The punishments, harsh reaction if the child interferes in some way. The affection is in theory, but it's not felt. These type of children are often victimized and cannot master their own passions. And a home there, I think we can see in David's home, again, a man after God's own heart, but a man that did not have control, and rightly so. It's very understandable. He had a lot going, and there's no way he could keep track of all his children. But we see that in his children. They were victimized. They couldn't master their own passions. And David suffered severely for that. The next one down below that, absorbing love, avoiding discipline, abusive. You know, the mentality that you exist for my needs instead of I'm here for you. Governed by moods of the parents. Constantly changing. The rules are, you know, punishments are either none at all, harsh or abusive, as governed by anger. You know, it gives them mixed signals. The outcome is an unpredictable personality with a tendency to reproduce abuse. And then starting from the on the right-hand column from the bottom up, we'll leave the best for last there, that ideal home. Low in love, high in discipline, you know, the authoritarian. The mentality, I am the law of this house. You know, the structure is patriarchal, controlled by a domineering figure. Strict rules, little mercy. Harsh with few explanations. You know, affection is not displayed. Affection or emotions are weakness. And the outcome are temporary good impressions, but tense personalities with hidden deviancies, looking for love. And all these homes up through here would we believe we'd call dysfunctional homes. And the home on the top right, high in love, high in discipline, the authoritative. You know, the mentality that there's a higher law we all must answer to. You know, we have somebody to answer to. It's the same way in the church. The church, Christ is ahead of the church. Christ is ahead of the home. There's a higher law. Structure is obvious headship and leadership. Schedule and order. Rules are sensible rules. Reasonable explanations. And the punishment's firm and consistent. Predictable. Affection, visible tenderness, and comfort in distress. The outcome is so well-adjusted, able to handle adult responsibilities. You know, what do we expect from our, what do we want with our children? You know, we want them to be our best friends. That's the goal. We want them to be as they grow up into adulthoods, we want to be together. We want to be on that's a blessing I have. I thank God for godly parents, and I believe I can call my parents my best friends. And, you know, if we don't, I believe, you know, even if things aren't, we're all human. We all make mistakes. We're going to make mistakes. And even if things aren't necessarily ideal, I believe it's the same attitudes we have towards our parents, you know, we're going to face the same kind of issues with our children if that's not overcome, if those barriers aren't broken and we can't have a relationship with our parents, we can expect the same thing. So it's very important. And appreciate what was shared there with the children, you know, Brother Delbert shared, and thinking children's relationships with each other. You know, I can look back at my own childhood. I see definitely wish there's some things I would do differently if I could do over. And, you know, there are some, I even suffered in later years, you know, because of maybe in retaliation from some of my younger siblings for things they thought I deserved. And, you know, it's at a point then that and it was done somewhat in fun, I think, but it was still, I knew I deserved it. And so I tried to be non-resistant about it, so just had to eat it. But, you know, there's, children should be, siblings, it's just great if they can be best friends, if they can look out for each other and grow up as friends. It's very important. And I don't have all the answers there, and I'm open to that. But the unwritten rules of the dysfunctional home, you know, when a couple allows differences to divide them these differences go unresolved, it produces tension in the home. And there are several patterns that often emerge as unwritten rules, and that rules that everyone learns to follow. One is don't talk. Keep your thoughts to yourselves. Bottle up emotions. Don't trust. You know, you never know what moods parents or others will be in. You never know when what you say will be used against you. Don't show emotions. You know, emotions are a sign of weakness. You're going to be made fun of if you show who you really are. And don't make a mistake. It will never be forgotten. It'll be used against you. And the results of these types of homes are tension, where children can't relax and develop into normal functioning individuals. In a home life must be happy for children to desire to follow the footsteps of father and mother. And if it's not, they're going to look for something else. And building the home through God-centered home life, you know, there's some things, important things in our home lives. And, you know, I think family worship on a consistent basis is very important. And in that, I think it should be, there's singing is a great thing. And, you know, these are all things that I feel like I need to, you know, we need to do more of. Seems like it's so hard to, especially as the children grow older and they're going here, they're going there, to find time. But I think it's better just to do it. If they're there, they are. If, and try to make so they're there. But there's times it's better just to have it than to wait till you can all be together and not have it. And Bible discussions. You know, it's a real blessing when children, I love when they come with questions. You know, what does this verse mean? How does it apply to us? It's a wonderful time, a wonderful opportunity to discuss Scripture and to just be able to relate and to teach. Praying together is a very important thing in our families. Spontaneous spiritual responses. You know, when we see children growing spiritually, it's a real blessing. In our homes, Bible-based home decor and reminders, I think are very, I love those. I love the verses on the walls and the things that, positive things that draw our mind to Christ. I also appreciate what we shared this morning about congregational support. You know, children, if we support our community, our church, children will sense that their home exists to serve a larger identity. You know, the family of God supersedes the nuclear family. You know, even though we may see flaws in the larger body, but we know it's God's plan. It's God's plan that we're a part of a church. Are we willing to lay down our lives for the brethren? You know, if we consider the church that important and we want to pass that vision on, we're going to have to live it out like we heard this morning. You know, we need to be there when the church doors are open. I believe it's a bad sign when our children ask us, are we going to church tonight? You know, it shouldn't be that normal. They should just plan on it. To know where parents stand, I think, brings a sense of security to the child. Okay, before we go into the seasons in a child's life, I'd like to think a little bit about the dual nature of a child. You know, Proverbs 22:6 says, train up a child in the way that he should go, and when he's old, he will not depart from it. And I believe that's true. I believe a child that is taught, it's going to be there. It's not going to go away. How they react, how they respond to it, it might be another thing. But a child that is taught, it's always going to be there. Now, children are created in the image of God with the ability to develop a spiritual relationship with him. There's several verses, John 1:9. That was the true light, which lighteth every man that cometh into the world. Luke 18:16. But Jesus called them unto him and said, suffer the little children to come unto me, and forbid them not, for of such is the kingdom of God. First Corinthians 14:20. Excuse me. Brethren, be not children in understanding, howbeit in malice be ye children, but in understanding be men. Children are born with a fallen or depraved human nature. You know, they're bent with an inclination to go astray. Psalm 58:3 says, the wicked are estranged from the womb. They go astray as soon as they are born, speaking lies. Romans 3:10 says, as it is written, there is none righteous, no, not one. And we need to understand that this dual nature enables parents to relate to both the positive and the negative characteristics of their child objectively. You know, it calls for parents to be actively engaged in child training. You know, it's a little bit like concrete work. You know, it's pliable, it's easy to move, but you know, as you lay it out, pretty soon it starts getting harder and harder, and you can do less and less with it. And it takes diligence. It's hard work, especially if the weather's warm. You don't sit around and relax. You don't, you know, just because it's lunchtime, you don't go take a lunch break necessarily. It might be too late when you come back. But you know, that time frame we have to work it and to get a nice finish on it is short, and then it's gone. Well, thankfully, that as long as there's life, there's still hope. Sometimes I go away from somebody speaking on child training, go away a little bit discouraged. I think, oh, yeah, it's already too late. But you know, like concrete, no two children are alike. They're all different. And if you're fortunate and you have a set of children that they are all the same, and that you can, this equals this, and this is what happens, and this is how they respond, you're kind of missing out on something, because you, for one thing, you're not going to be sympathetic with those of us that it doesn't work that way, and for another thing, that's just not really the way it is. But I know when our children were younger, and still have some pretty young ones, but you know, we ask advice. Sometimes we got advice without asking for it. And it was all good advice, and I appreciated it. And don't, if you have something to share, we need all the help we can get. But you know, it's just don't. Some children, it just works different. Things work differently, and it's important to try to figure out what does work, and to work with the child. But I think one thing that follows through all the way is consistency. Okay, looking at the different stages, there you have a sheet. Hopefully you all have one now. Different stages in the child's life. The infant stage, you know, it's a season to establish strong emotional bonds. Now, this is a time that the child is helpless and completely out of control. It's also a time the parent's selfishness is confronted by unrelenting demands. You know, it doesn't matter what time of the night it is. It doesn't matter how tired you are. If that child's hungry or if that child is not feeling good, you're going to have to take care of it. And sometimes it's rough, and it's especially when you're seems like the older you get, the harder it gets. But the goal, I think, the lesson us as parents can learn is unselfish, affectionate service. And it's also, I think, you can never really appreciate what your parents have done for you till you've gone through that yourself, and you realize what they were willing to do for you. And how much our Father in Heaven cares for us. Okay, the next one, toddler stage. I believe this is the season to confront their toddler's nature. I think the training starts even when they're, you know, not very old, but as a toddler, it's a time to teach him to, like Steve puts it here, he says, to hearken. And to hearken would be to give respectful attention. It says, before learning to listen, a child must be trained to hearken. He must come to realize wisdom lieth without. It will not be learned without listening to his inner impulses. One thing I won't do that Steve did is give a whole lot of personal examples. It'd probably be counterproductive. But he gave a lot of examples in his own life, but he didn't have his children there. But you know, without training, the child will become he's just going to become, well, he puts it very bluntly here, a fool. One who has not been trained to accept direction outside his own will. He may have been instructed, but will not listen because he is accustomed to only follow what his flesh suggests. A scorner, one who mocks righteousness, seeking to dissuade him from course of obedience. Simple, one who has been taught and warned and therefore falls into the snares, who has not been taught and warned and therefore falls into the snares of temptations. Now, these character traits are alive and wreaking havoc in each new generation. I think it's important that as we train our children, that they also learn to, one thing that's, I think, disappearing from our day is respect for older ones. They need to, if somebody else tells them something, they should also listen, even if it's not something we would ask, maybe, but it's important that we teach them to listen to others and not talk disrespectfully. Respect needs to be taught. You know, to a little child, he is the center of the universe. The world exists to serve me. If I want it, I deserve it. The rules don't apply to me. No authority has the right to stop me. It's not my fault. I can't help what happened here. Any correction is going to be an injustice if he's not taught. You know, you don't have to teach a toddler to hit, to bite, and to fight. That just generally comes naturally. They're all tempered different. Or to disobey his parents. These things have to be corrected. And he has to be molded in the right before you can teach him to be kind, loving, and obedient. You must force the wrong behavior to end. Now, the toddler needs to be convinced that wrong behavior will not be tolerated, and that wrong behavior will be undesirable, that the consequences will be undesirable, and he will not want to repeat them. Now, the Bible makes it clear. I think God created us in a way. He gave a place for punishment. He's not for anger, not punishment and anger, not abusive. And I believe I'll just quote what Steve said here. He said, three good smacks should be enough. You know, I remember a family that was promoting the 100 smacks, but I think that's way out of line. It shouldn't need to be there. But he also said it's very, if that doesn't work, then another three, and then another three. The will needs to be broken. And maybe there's other, losses of privileges or freedoms. There's different ways of punishing also. Hebrews 12, verse 10, I'd like to read that. It says, for they verily for a few days chastened us after their own pleasure, but he for our profit, that we might be partakers of his holiness. Now no chastening for the present seemeth to be joyous, but grievous. Nevertheless, afterward it yieldeth the peaceable fruit of righteousness unto them which are exercised thereby. You know, train a child, you must be willing to inflict deliberate and measured pain. The pain of the punishment needs to exceed the pleasure of disobedience and be consistent, so temptation loses its appeal. And the discipline is not over until the will is brought to subjection. The scholar stage, the reason for consistent punishment that cleanses and develops the conscience. Hebrews 5, verse 14. It says, but strong meat belongeth to them that are of full age, even those who by reason of use have their senses exercised to discern both good and evil. I believe that's a little bit what Brother David was talking about, Dave, this morning in training the conscience. Raising children with conviction. I believe that is so important and is so crucial in this whole thing that we have men and women of conviction. Okay, and going on to the scholar age there. You know, it's important to maintain a baseline of love and acceptance, and to give respect and to boundaries of acceptable behavior, and to discipline with appropriate measures and degrees. You know, there should be violation, an appropriate punishment that goes with that, not something way out of proportion. But the pain of the punishment must exceed the pleasure of the disobedience. You know, whatever it is, it has to be worthwhile. It has to be something that makes them not want to do that again. Whether it's physical punishment or taking away privilege or whatever it is. Comfort after discipline. All signals are that the relationship is restored. I believe it's very important that, you know, after the discipline, after it's through, the relationship's restored, comfort and talking together, time of sharing, but to never mention the disobedience or the discipline again. You know, that shouldn't be brought up. Another thing that I believe is very important all through these stages in the home life is, you know, I don't believe meal time is a time to be bringing up things that have happened throughout the day, things that need to be dealt with. And the meal time should be a time that the family can sit around, a time to be enjoyed. You know, when there's stress at mealtime, things don't work right, and that's not good. It's not healthy. So I think we need to be sure that that's mealtime is a time that we forget about those kind of things and we enjoy our meal. Okay, common mistakes, that parental mistakes that anger children. You know, why so many youth feel justified in rebelling against church-going parents? You know, a child that feels justifiably angry with his parents will feel no compulsion to follow in his parents' example. You know, disciplining in anger or frustration. You know, I'd say if you feel like you're at the end of your rope, if you're desperate, you know, that is probably the wrong time to punish or to decide on a punishment. I think that's a time you need to spend time on your knees asking for divine guidance. And Jesus says, ask and it shall be given. Knock and it shall be opened. Seek and you shall find. I'm not sure if I got those in the right order, but, you know, there are times that I know in our own personal lives that you just don't know where to go next. And it's times of crying out to God for help and for direction. If we discipline because of one's own emotional needs, also, you know, that also brings frustration to the child. Making and breaking promises. If we promise something, it's important that we keep that promise. You know, even if it's going out back and sleeping in a tent and it turns out it doesn't work out too good, why, there's times you just go ahead and do that. And it's important. If parents ignore needs in the children in order to pursue personal dreams, is also, you know, children know they see those things, and also I believe if they see that other things are taking priority over them, even if it's good things, we need to be careful. Partiality, preference of one child over another. Allowing injustice among siblings. Also, humiliation. You know, we should not, as parents, we shouldn't humiliate our children in front of peers. Comparing your child with others in a negative way. And ignoring or belittling inquiries and requests. What are some good goals for parenting? Respect. We need to teach them due regard for the feelings and rights of others, you know. Humility before God and authority. A proper attitude toward self's inadequacy. Responsibility is another thing that's very important. I believe it's important to our children at a young age can need to be given responsibility. And, you know, sometimes that's tough. Sometimes some do better than others, but you know, I think it's important that, especially if they're taking care of animals, that they're taking care of right, and there's consequences for not taking care of them right. You know, if the animal don't get watered for a day, maybe it'd be good to have them try to go without water for a day, we need to teach responsibility. Resourcefulness, to find ways to overcome difficulties. Don't give up. Try it again. I'll give one example here, I guess. Had one of my children had a huge pile of wood, and there was a real reason to try to, desperately trying to figure out a way to earn some money to buy something. So I said, got this pile of wood to split here, and it was a big pile. And I said it could be taken back and stacked in the shed. Well, to my amazement, I got home that night, the next night, and that whole pile of wood was split, and that whole pile of wood was back in the shed, and had been stacked, but it was had totally, after just when it was completed, stacked, the whole pile crumbled out. And this was a hard day's work. And it, I knew what happened, because the original pile that was in there was leaning the wrong direction, and it needed to be straightened up before it was piled against. So it was a lot of frustration, and I couldn't blame him at all. It was a lot of hard work, and it all was laid out flat and had to be totally restacked. But, you know, I could have, if I'd have been there, I would have told him this has to be done over. But, you know, I think it's good for children to work at things, figure them out themselves, and, you know, there's probably those kind of lessons that are learned that if I would have, we can try to tell them, and they would understand. But there's something about having to go through it, having to restack it again, that it's a lesson that will, something that will be useful in life. And it's a blessing to see, I love to see children figure things out and to be able to, you know, if this don't work, we'll try this. You know, sometimes it can be maybe frustrating even, but we need to be careful. I think we need to push them to figure out, to be productive, and to try to be resourceful, to try to figure out how to go ahead and to make things work and to fix things. It's only by, you know, a lot of things come a lot better by trying, and if it don't work, try again. Keep going. I think we need to encourage him in that. You know, another thing we see in, and I mentioned the other day that I had, when I was in at the dentist, I looked at this parenting magazine, and another article in there was, they were talking about how to get your children when it's time to push what you want them to do. Maybe if you want them to say please and thank you, that's not really something that's that important. It's not worth making an issue over. Just do it yourself, and eventually they'll catch on. You know, I don't believe that's correct. I think we need to teach them. They need to learn to say it's not something we just hope they catch on. They may and they may not. But another common thing in the modern parent is, you know, when proper behavior does not work, there must be a biological problem which calls for medication. And I'm not saying that's never the case, but I think we need to be very careful there. You know, a child always struggles with independent will and a rebellious nature. That's just the way we're born. Correct consequence may bring about a behavior change, and then again, it may not. In discipline, the goal should be the process whereby parents transform a willful child into a willing disciple, someone who will look up to them, trust them, and subscribe to their values and follow their leadership. Okay, thinking a little bit about the youth on up in the next stage. Proverbs 23:26 says, "My son, give me thine heart, and let thine eyes observe my ways." You know, guiding youth, you know, a lot of Proverbs talks about that. Proverbs 23:15-35 are some verses that we're not going to take time to go there, but some verses that are lay a lot of good instruction there. I think it's important, as you know, it's very important that we be have an atmosphere of being involved. We stay involved. We refuse to be intimidated. It's important that we work together with our children, including our youth. You know, when internal controls are not working, external controls must be put in place for character and conviction to develop. You know, the temptation for parents is, when youth, you know, fret about control, is to loosen up and give them what they want, and you then start backing off. And I think that's the way it should be. And as they mature, as they learn, and as they prove themselves, we can give them more slack, give them more privileges. Yeah, but growing up on the outside and growing up on the inside are two different things. You know, outward ability doesn't guarantee license and liberty. You know, when youth do not behave appropriately, dress themselves consistently, make spiritual choices with their resources, you know, it's not only the youth that are to blame, but it's the parents, also their parents. The conduct of the youth is the responsibility of the parents. And I believe that's what it's, you know, we need men and women of conviction. You know, I had a minister from his church from a long ways from here, but he was talking to me and lamenting the fact that their church did not take a stand on texting. And I told him, because he had a child with a problem with that, and I said, you know, that's your responsibility. That's not necessarily the church's. You know, if you have a child that has a problem with that, you have a right to put limitations on. You have a right to take away privileges. And it's your, not only a right, but it's your responsibility. It's not the church's necessarily. Parents have a responsibility to know where their children are, not only physically, but also morally, emotionally, socially, and spiritually. You know, we need to know where they are. You know, if youth do not obey parental directions, parents have the responsibility to deny privileges until the course is corrected. And I believe that there, you know, as there should not, we shouldn't permit a generation gap. There should be no generation gap between parents and their youth. You know, when youth begin to reflect or display values different from their parents, something is wrong that must be corrected. And be involved. You know, and it's one story that Brother Steve gave. He had two sons, and I'm not sure exactly how this all was on their ages, but he did not feel like they were ready to go with the youth at whatever their accepted age was, 16. And he held them back for a time period. And he told them that's what he wants them to do, and they were very upset. And, you know, I can't blame them too much. But he gave them some things. If you'll agree to do this, he just felt like they weren't ready for that peer pressure. And he gave him some, if you agree, if you follow this, I'll do this for you, and I'll work with you in this, forget what all the details were. And they came back a week later, and they said, we'll agree to what you are asking us to do. But if we ever have teenagers, we'll never do that to ours. So they're both married and have their own families now. I don't know him, but that's what he had said. What he said. So, you know, I think it's. I think we should be able to work. You know, we should support our church functions, but I also believe it's important for. I appreciate the emphasis that, and I think it's important that we are involved with our children, with our even our youth, that we, you know, do things together with them, be a part of their lives. Don't just let a bunch of them go off. You know, just go with them. Spend time with them and know what they're doing. Get involved in things that, you know, maybe you don't like to fish or hunt or whatever it is they want to do, but camp. But take the time to do it. Just do it for spending time with them. They need uh, They need your, you know, when it says, if youth looks more to his peer group for his acceptance and attention than to his parents, then he will not find the right guidance or direction. And I believe that's it's important to be involved in their lives. Be on guard for trends that are influencing the youth. You know, moral purity through guidance, protection, and accountability. If we walk in the light as he is in the light, we have fellowship one with another, and the blood of Jesus Christ, his Son, cleanses us from all sin. You know, rule of thumb, when the door of fellowship is closed, look for the reason. You know, as parents, and you know your children, you see there's something wrong. There's a barrier there. You know, it's important to find out what is going on. Don't just hope for the best, or maybe this will go away. But find out. Take the time. Do what it takes to see what's going on. You know, there's a enemy that's there out to get our children, that want to corrupt the morals of our youth. You know, corrupted conscience has no stopping point. You know, it's parents' responsibility to inform the child of his development, to warn him of the temptations he will face, and to instruct him how to respond when he finds himself tempted. You know, it's not something that, you know, could happen, but it's something that will happen. We need to be up front and to be open. Parental involvement in courtship. You know, courtship is intended to extend the family borders, not to isolate members from their family ties. And I think the trends have changed since I was at that stage. And I think it's very important that young man, if he desires to start a relationship, that he talks to the father of the girl he once would like to see. It's only respectful, it's only right, and I think it can be, I'm glad to see that has changed. You know, courtship should be for the purpose of marriage, not just for fun. You know, and I think as youth, you need to be open, you need to be sensitive to your parents. You need to, there's too much at stake. Don't hesitate to talk to them about it, or talk to somebody you trust. Be open. And parents should monitor the activities. You should know what the standards are and how things are going. And I believe, and there's variables here too, but it's very important to follow your parents. Nobody cares more for you than your parents do. You know, too many times, in families, we see, and I've seen this in my short lifetime, you see, we'll talk about the young men, you see the son kind of following their father's footsteps. And then maybe a little later in life, you see him kind of turned opposite directions. And then eventually it turns around and the father is following the son. You know, that's not scriptural. That's not the way it should be. If we want our children to be our best friends, we must follow the Bible way. I'd like to read this line here on the adult line there. It's, you know, this, the need there is to be given support and guidance to our young people. You know, the wonderful part there is that they can be our best friend. You know, and we can relate in all areas of life. Heartfelt sharing of counsel, reviewing of memories, and be a resource for times of need. And the child's responsibilities to find and fill the place that God is for them in life, to express responsibility, joy, and satisfaction. So I know there's a lot more that could be covered. It's just, I might read a little article here. Part of it was author unknown, and then the last four stanzas Steve Ebersole wrote. to follow up with it. He couldn't stand the way this article stopped, so he finished it off. It's an example. He whipped his boy for lying. His cheeks were flaming red. Of course, there's no denying there was truth in what he said. That a liar is always hated, but the little fellow knew that his father often stated many things that were untrue. He caught the youngster cheating. He sent him up to bed, and it's useless now repeating all the bitter things he said. He talked of honor loudly and a lesson to be learned, and forgot he'd boasted proudly of the cunning tricks he'd turned. He heard the youngster swearing, and he punished him again. He'd have no boy as daring as to utter words profane. Yet the youngster could have told him, poor misguided little elf, that it seemed unfair to scold him when he often cursed himself. All is vain and splendid preaching, and the noble things we say. All our talk is wasted teaching, if we do not lead the way. We can never, by reviewing all the sermons on the shelves, keep the younger hands from doing what we often do ourselves. Another example. He sensed his wife was grieving as a tear slid down her cheek. So he gave her words endearing, though his reservoir was weak. They never saw that Henry had looked up just in time to capture in his memory the tenderness sublime. He glanced down at his dashboard and quickly slowed the car. He stopped fully at the stop sign. He looked both near and far. He nodded to the neighbor and politely said hello, and marveled that his son seemed to honor people so. He bowed his head in sorrow at the cruel words foes had said. The tears fell in his dinner as he tried to eat his bread. But he smiled in sweet acceptance, not resenting grief and pain. Should we wonder that his children see the rainbows through the rain? There is gain in splendid preaching and in noble things we say, but our talk is wasted teaching if we do not lead the way. We will ever, by justly living all the sermons on the shelves, lead the younger hands in doing what we often do ourselves. I believe it's so true. You know, we can do much more by example than if we're not living it, we can't expect to pass it on. Let's kneel for prayer.